as I walk out tonight in the mystic garden. The wounded flowers were dangling from the vine. I was passing by a young cool crystal fountain. Someone hit me from behind. Ain't talking, just walking through this weary world of the world. Heart burning, still yearning. No one on earth would ever know.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Cott with my co-host Jim DeRogatis, and we've been looking back at 60s era Bob Dylan in honor of his 70th birthday.
Greg, it's going to be time to play some key tracks, but there's a point I want to make before we get to these songs. You know, as rock critics, it bothers us when people live in the past and they don't consider an artist in the present. Dylan, I think both of us agree, tops a short list of rock greats who have really never fallen off in terms of the quality of their productivity. Has he made a blonde on blonde lately? No. But over the last 15, 20 years, he has made some extraordinarily good albums with songs that hold up to the best of any he's ever put out. I think that that track from the 2006 album Modern Times, it's called Ain't Talkin', is the creepiest song he's written in a very long career and one of the finest. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. The late career renaissance of Dylan is unequaled, I think, in rock history. Nobody's had a better third act than Bob Dylan.
That having been said, we want to get back to the period we've been focusing on in this hour, the folk years and the early electric period. We spent some time talking with Clinton Halen earlier in the show about how much of Dylan's protest music doesn't hold up. Greg, you made the point that Dylan began phasing this stuff out of his set. There is one song, however, that I think is the very best of any of his protest anthems, and he's never phased it out. It's come up at particular times. I struggled, as I said, to learn to love Dylan, and I got in to Dylan through the covers often. I remember 1983 being at Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, on the eve of President Reagan invading a tiny island nation I didn't know existed named Grenada. And the Long Riders, a wonderful pioneering alternative country band, are on stage, and they reacted to this by playing Masters of War. I remember later on an invasion of a country named Iraq. The first time seeing a band called Yola Tango, also from Hoboken, within the first, 72 hours of that invasion, and hearing Yola Tango cover Masters of War. And then you and I were reviewing Dylan not long after the beginning of the second invasion of Iraq, the second Gulf War, and Dylan comes out and plays Masters of War. This is a timeless tune. It is not per se an anti-war song. Dylan has said this is a pacifist anthem. That's why I think it stands the test of time, and sad to say, it always is timely. Dylan has said he was inspired by Eisenhower's famous speech upon leaving the presidency, Eisenhower telling America, beware the military-industrial complex, beware the big business of making the machines of warfare, because people who make these machines want to use them. Dylan wrote this song based on a traditional English folk song called Not a Mun Town. That's basically a nonsense song, a lot of surreal imagery based on the mummers' plays in England. It migrates over to the United States and is a popular folk song in the Appalachian Mountains. Dylan borrows a specific arrangement of it by a folk singer named Gene Ritchie, who he eventually has to pay $5,000 to for stealing that arrangement, and he's on fire. Rare, even among the early protest songs, is the use of you and I. Come, you masters of war, you that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, I can see through your masks. He's angry. I think this is an incredible song. It gives me goosebumps talking about it. Even better is going to be when you hear it. Try to listen to it with fresh ears. Bob Dylan, Masters of War, from the Free Will and Dylan in 1963.
He's thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. A foe threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know
but you talk out of turn. You might say that I'm young, you might say I'm unlearned, but there's one thing I know, I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed, and I stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
Masters of War by Bob Dylan from 1963 on Sound Opinions. Jim, I want to highlight what I think is the definitive track from the definitive album by Bob Dylan, and that's Visions of Johanna from Blonde on Blonde. What an amazing song. I think it encapsulates Dylan's theory about his own songwriting in that his songs are never finished. He never feels like they're fixed in time. This song was recorded numerous times in numerous different ways, and he has since redefined it when he's played it live. He's done it acoustic, he's done it with a full band. You know, those New York sessions we talked about, he produced two pretty good versions of Visions of Johanna in late 65 with the Hawks in New York, and yet still somehow was not satisfied. That sound he heard in his head had still not been realized. When he got to Nashville with Robertson on guitar and Cooper on organ joining those Nashville guys, he got that thin Wild Mercury sound that you were talking about. He heard that sound. And to this day, he still talks about this song with great fondness. You know, he said, if you had to define me, this is maybe the song. What's fascinating about this song is not only the great musicianship, those swelling guitar fills by Robbie Robertson, and Al Cooper complimenting each verse and chorus with the rising and falling of his organ.
And it must be said again, Cooper has played that organ for all of a year and a half at this point.
Right. By now, he's anticipating Dylan's every move, and Kenny Buttrey, just with these little taps on the crash cymbal every once in a while, just expertly complimenting what's going on in the song. It is a room full of musicians in complete empathy with what is going on in this song, and it is a moving piece of work. You talk about the Rimbaud influence, the French symbolist poet, influencing what was going on here, the derangement of the senses that Rimbaud was going for. It's very much a part of this song. It's all atmosphere. There's something happening here, but we don't know what it is, Jim. It's people have been trying to figure it out for decades. There's this mix of very concrete images. You know, we've got these lovers entwined, and there's a drug deal going on, and there's a street scene out the window, and a radio playing a country song in this room. And then there's all these surreal, dreamlike images. We're not really sure if it's real or not. Who are these characters? Louise, this little boy lost, Johanna herself. Are they real, or is it just something that's going on in the narrator's mind? We're really not sure. Johanna is obviously the central character. She could be a lost love, a muse, a ghost. Is she the devil? There's some who have thought that Johanna is a variation on the Hebrew word Gehenna, or hell. You know, is Dylan talking about a vision of hell here? There's some hints here that he's dropping. We sit here stranded, though we're all doing our best to deny it. Are we in hell and don't know it? That's the kind of questions this song raises. And think about the shift. When you go from something like, the times they are a-changing, finger-pointing, the answers are evident. Here, nothing is evident. It's all a play that continually haunts the listener. What is the real meaning of the song? You know, 45 years later, we still haven't quite figured it out. And I think that's the key to its timelessness. A brilliant piece of poetic songwriting by Bob Dylan with a great backing band. Visions of Johanna on Sound Opinions.
just like the night to play tricks when you're trying to be so quiet. We'll sit here stranded, though we're all doing our best to deny it. And Louise holds a handful of rain, tempting you to defy it. Lights flicker from the opposite loft. In this room, the heat pipes just cough. The country music station plays soft, but there's nothing, really nothing to turn off. Just Louise and her lover, so entwined. And his visions of Johanna that conquer my mind. Empty lot where the ladies play. Blind man's bluff with the keychain. And the all night girls, the whisper of escapades out on the D train. We can hear the night watchman click his flashlight, ask himself if it's him or them, it's insane. Right, she's just near. She's delicate and seems like the mirror, but she just makes it all too concise and too clear that Johanna's not here. The ghost of electricity howls in the bones of her face. Visions of Johanna have not taken my place.
That was Visions of Johanna by Bob Dylan from his 1966 album Blonde on Blonde. Thanks for joining us for this Sound Opinions special hour on the music of Bob Dylan.
Sound Opinions comes from WBEZ Chicago and is distributed by PRX. For more, go to soundopinions.org.